This is The Guardian.
Today, after decades of underinvestment, England's water system is bursting. Can we fix it?
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, very good morning to you. Watch out for some blustery winds and some heavy rain today.
Plenty of heavy rain, saturated ground, lots of surface water.
As a weather front moves through, which, once again, brings us more rainfall for the start of next week.
You would think over the last few months, we've been absolutely pelted with rain, that at least we haven't got to worry about water shortages or hosepipe bans this summer. However, that is, perhaps unbelievably, not the case. Experts have said that if we get a hot, dry summer, which is predicted at the moment, that we are likely to run out of water.
There's a big problem with the rain in England. Not how much we get of it, but how much we let go. How it floods the land where there should be reservoirs. How it's allowed to leak out of our aging plumbing systems. We don't store it properly, and then we end up with shortages. One of the reasons for that is because our water doesn't technically belong to us. It belongs to private companies. England is one of the few countries in the world where water is completely privatised. And that's not a system that's working well at the moment.
Now, Britain's biggest water company could become the largest failure of privatisation. A standoff between the company and regulator, Ofwat, has seen shareholders pull the plug on a multi-billion pound investment and the boss scrambling to reassure customers it can stay afloat.
The biggest company, Thames Water, is in hundreds of millions of pounds of debt and is arguing with the government over who should be repaying it. From The Guardian, I'm Hannah Moore. Today in Focus, who should own England's water? Helena Horton, you're an environment reporter for The Guardian. You've written a lot about Thames Water, both because it's the biggest water company in the country, it serves 16 million people across London and the South, and also because it's so riddled with problems. What's happening with it at the moment?
So in recent days, the umbrella company for Thames Water, Kemble, has said it's going to have to default on a debt that it owes. So a repayment on a debt, and that's £190 million. It owes this money by the end of April, and it said it will not be able to pay it. This means that the company is at risk of restructuring or even complete failure and collapse. The restructuring option is definitely on the table because Thames Water has hired restructuring experts to come in, look at the books and see what can be done to save the company.
How has it ended up in so much debt?
So Thames Water, although it's providing a crucial resource, water, it's privatised and it's owned by a consortium of shareholders, and they are a very wide-ranging group of people from a Canadian pension fund to an arm of the Chinese government, to a finance group owned by the Abu Dhabi government and various other shareholders. They own it. Essentially, Thames Water has over the years been very highly leveraged with debt because debt used to be very cheap. Obviously, borrowing used to be cheap when interest rates were low. It was how the shareholders made money, and they loaded the company with debt in order to, you know, make money for the shareholders. Because if you have a company that is privatised and is owned by shareholders, the impetus is to pay out dividends and it's to, you know, enrich the people who've chosen to put money in. But interest rates have spiked, obviously, in the last couple of years, which has meant servicing their debt has become ever more expensive. The shareholders were supposed to inject £500 million into the company this year, but they're not doing it. They're saying that they won't pay it unless changes are made by the government, regulator Ofwat. They're demanding that the company be allowed to put up bills and no longer be fined for things like spilling sewage in order to become financially viable again.
Wow, okay. So the situation at the moment is that customers' bills are going towards paying the debt and the shareholders are not paying towards it.
The shareholders have put money into the company, some of which has gone towards paying off the debt. But yes, a large chunk of our water bills is currently going towards servicing debt repayments.
You said that the Thames Water shareholders are complaining about the fines that the company's been getting for sewage spills. Ofwat is the body that regulates water companies. What are they demanding that Thames Water fixes?
Ofwat has suddenly, I'd say, changed its tune and come down like a ton of bricks on Thames, because we have to remember that Ofwat, the regulator, has allowed Thames to get into this position by not taking as strong a line on the leveraging of debt and also on sewage and other issues. Ofwat is asking Thames to fix leaks, lose less water, and also to stop spilling sewage, and it fines Thames if they don't meet these certain targets. Thames is fighting back. They have been meeting to say Ofwat should stop fining Thames so much for spilling sewage, and that they should allow Thames Water to put up bills by up to 40% to pay for the infrastructure required to stop the spills.
Well, so you've got this ridiculous standoff where everybody's blaming each other for the problems, and in the meantime, the service isn't being demonstrably improved.
For Cambridge and for another victory, Oxford are closing, but they're not going to have enough river left to overhaul this light blue crew.
I mean, a couple of weeks ago, when the Oxford and Cambridge boat race took place, rowers from Oxford's team got sick, they say, from ingesting the water in the River Thames.
I mean, this morning I was throwing up and I really wasn't sure that there was going to be a chance for me to be in the boat. Would have been ideal not to have so much poo in the water. But
how has a situation like that happened, where there's E. coli in the River Thames?
Well, raw sewage contains E. coli. And again, relatively uniquely, we're one of the only countries to have a combined sewage system. So grey water from your washing machine, your bath, rainwater and sewage all go into the same drain. And then when there's too much of it, so when it rains, and often actually when it doesn't rain, it spills all into the rivers rather than going into the treatment centre because there's too much of it. And if it didn't do that, it would back up into people's homes. So obviously we can't have that, so they're putting it into the rivers instead.
So how much sewage is Thames Water dumping into the rivers?
So the numbers are hard to figure out because the monitors that show how much sewage is being pumped or dumped into our rivers, they only show the amount of hours that the sewage has been released for. So it could be coming out at a fast or a slow rate, which would change the amount of litres. But there is one monitor on the Thames. And from that one monitor alone near Richmond, they pumped at least 72 billion litres of sewage into the Thames since 2020, which is roughly equal to 29,000 Olympic swimming pools. And that's only on one area of the Thames. So the true number will be a lot higher.
And I mean, the Thames is a natural habitat. Can you see the consequences of that on the creatures that live in it?
Yes, studies have shown that in areas where the sewage is pumped into the water, animal life is choked out. So sewage contains nutrients, phosphates and nitrates. These phosphates and nitrates break down from the waste, you know, fecal matter. If you put too much nutrients in waterways, this causes an algal bloom because algae feeds on these nutrients. And also you get other plant life as well that feeds on the nutrients. This chokes out the life in the river because you get this big, thick scum of algae on top of the water. And underneath that, the fish, invertebrates, other plants can't get any sunlight. So then obviously they die off.
So incredibly grim, you know, when you think that people are going swimming in there, they're rowing in there. Thames Water have said since that boat race in a statement that they experienced higher than average long-term rainfall across London and the Thames Valley, with groundwater levels exceptionally high for the time of the year. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it's true. The more it rains, there's more rainwater in the pipes with the sewage, which means it's going to overflow. Thames also will say they are building a super sewer. So we're having a massive super sewer being built in London that should separate the sewage from other water.
More than 50 metres below London, engineers have been building what they hope will be the solution to the capital's sewage problems. The existing Victorian system struggles to cope in significant rainfall, often leading to untreated waste being pumped into the River Thames.
And that will be completed, I think, by the end of the year. So to be fair to Thames, which, you know, we're critiquing them quite a lot, but the problem is being remedied by the sewer, at least partially. But it still remains the case that a lack of investment over the past few decades from all water companies, including Thames, has meant we are now in a situation where it's dangerous to go for a swim in a lot of our waterways.
As well as having to cope with some of our waterways actually being poisoned, it's also likely that we're going to have water shortages this summer, which might seem quite surreal given the amount of rainfall that people across the country have experienced over the past few weeks. You mentioned that Ofwat's concerned that Thames Water isn't storing enough water. Is it simply the case that we haven't got enough reservoirs?
We haven't built a new major reservoir in England since privatisation happened, so for 30 years. The population has obviously grown since then. And as I said earlier, there isn't the impetus to invest in infrastructure when you have shareholders to keep happy. But there are also just so many issues with the way that we look after water in this country, not just with regards to reservoirs, but more kind of natural things too. So we used to transport everything around this country via canals. And that meant we straightened the rivers and deepened them so you could easily get a boat around. Rivers are supposed to be kind of more wiggly than that, and they're supposed to be wider and spread out over a wider area and have wetlands and floodplains. But if you think about a river now, you're going to think about that straight line, aren't you, rather than a load of different tributaries and wetlands surrounding it. So this means that the water moves more quickly. So once it rains, it doesn't stay in the land, doesn't go into the groundwater or recharge the aquifers. It goes straight down out into the sea. And we've also drained a lot of our ancient floodplains, such as the Somerset Levels is one of the biggest ones and best examples that's been drained for agriculture. So other countries which have less rain than us might look at our country and think, how the hell are they running out of water when they have so much more rain than we do? And something I also have to mention is climate change.
Now, extreme downpours could become four times more frequent in 50 years' time if greenhouse gas emissions remain high. That's according to a new study from the Met Office, which found that for every degree of warming, the intensity of extreme downpours could also increase by up to 15%.
So we used to kind of get a guaranteed mild amount of rain all year round. But in recent years, we've been having what meteorologists refer to as all or nothing weather patterns, which means we get a load of rain dumped on us in autumn and winter, as we've experienced this year, and then often very hot, dry summer with no rain whatsoever. So we've built our system around constant drizzle, essentially, and instead we're now getting all or nothing.
Then the leaks in the system, what is causing those?
It's a trillion litres of water is lost in leaks every single year.
I can't even comprehend.
I know,
what
I can't.
That is.
I don't even know how many Olympic swimming pools that is, I'm afraid. But yes, that is an incomprehensible amount of leakage. And also, if all those leaks were stemmed, there would be no need to conserve water as we currently being directed to do, because it would actually make up for the shortfall projected in demand for water. So our pipes are, in a lot of cases, Victorian, literally Victorian, have not been replaced since Victorian era, which means that they are very, very vulnerable to cold weather, for example, causing them to burst, so you get more leaks in winter, or just eroding away and they get a hole. And it's been estimated that at the current rate of replacing pipes in England, it would take 2,000 years, because they're replacing them so slowly, to get them up to scratch.
And I mean, how much would it cost to do that job? Say it all, you know, came to fruition and kind of they really got going on upgrading the system.
It would cost billions of pounds for sure. But the issue is all of these issues have become really expensive because of a lack of action over 30 years. Even if you look at the debt leverage, if they hadn't have done that and had instead invested in the infrastructure, when borrowing money was actually cheap. It would be a lot cheaper than it is now to build things. If it had been fixed more gradually over like a longer period of time, it would have been cheaper to fix. So basically, all of these problems have compounded and we're facing multiple crises at once that are going to be very expensive to fix, either for the government, for water bill payers and for the water companies.
And meanwhile, how much has Thames Water paid out in dividends?
Thames Water's paid out $7.2 billion in dividends since 1990.
The answer is not to hit the consumers. The answer is for the management team to look to their own approach and ask themselves why they're in this difficult situation. And of course, the answer is because of serial mismanagement for which they must carry the can.
What's the government planning to do to fix the problems with Thames Water then?
In public, they say it's a matter for the water company, but in private, they really do have to prepare for all eventualities, including the new likely eventuality that it's going to collapse. They have a cross-governmental department group called Project Timber, where they've all been getting together to discuss what will actually happen if they have to take over operations at Thames Water and what that will look like. Because a water company can't be allowed to completely fail with no government stepping in, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to have our services, which is water coming out of our taps. But I do think that they're waiting for it to become Labour's problem if Labour wins the general election as predicted, because there's been very little from government on this, at least publicly. And I think that they are just hoping that things don't come to a head until after the election. But as we saw with the issue of them defaulting on the loan this month, that seems very unlikely, actually.
Is that reassuring to people whose water is being supplied by Thames?
Well, we are always going to get the water out of our taps because the company will keep running. It has to, because the government would step in and put it under special measures. But no, it's not reassuring to think that the company that's managing the most precious resource, arguably, for the biggest population in England, is in such dire straits. It isn't very reassuring, no. And it does make one think about whether the structure of this privatised system is feasible to have for a water company monopoly. It's not capitalism, because I can't say I'm dissatisfied with Thames Water's service, so I'm switching. There's no competition. There's been no real risk for shareholders. But capitalism is supposed to be about, is it not, competition, risk, pushing a company to do better because it's concerned about, you know, the competition from other companies. You don't have that with a monopoly of a public service such as water. So it seems to be a complete failure of capitalism.
Coming up, should we renationalise England's water system?
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Transitioning to a decarbonised economy sounds like just one change. In fact, this shift requires several transitions across sectors, geographies, and timelines. In Talking Transitions, a new podcast brought to you by the EY organisation and Foresight Climate and Energy, we look at how the transition is affecting three key areas: energy, financial services, and government. The Talking Transitions podcast is out now. Download today from wherever you get your podcasts or visit talkingtransitions.com to find out more.
Helena, we've only talked so far about Thames Water, but it's just one of, as you've said, many private water companies across England. Are others looking at a similar financial situation?
None as bad. So there are some water companies that have been relatively well run compared to Thames, others that have also taken on debts, but none to the scale that Thames has. Thames has been run particularly badly. So it depends where you are in the country, to be honest. And that's the same for things like leaks and sewage too. There are some performers who are doing well comparatively well. No water company is actually doing a sufficient job, I don't believe. But Thames is an extreme example of what happens when running a water company goes wrong.
Would the solution be to renationalise our water systems?
That is a solution. It would be very, very expensive to do so if the government had to buy out all the water companies. And also then the government would have to spend billions of pounds updating all of the infrastructure. So in the short term, it would be very, very expensive for the country to do that. I don't think any potential government, apart from the Green Party, have said they'd nationalise it. Labour hasn't said they'd nationalise it. No one wants to spend that money, essentially. The water companies don't want to spend it unless they can hike your bills massively. And the government doesn't want to spend that money either. So nationalisation could work, but it would require a lot of investment in something that won't be fixed over a 5-year parliamentary term. So the government of the day would not reap the rewards of nationalisation.
So it's just completely unlikely to happen then, isn't it?
Yes, under Keir Starmer's Labour, it would be unlikely to happen because they've said they won't do it and they don't want to break their fiscal rules and spend billions and billions of pounds. Thames Water could end up being temporarily nationalised, so being put under special administration is a temporary nationalisation, but it would then be sold quite cheaply to another private group of shareholders.
And should that happen, would it mean that our bills would go up?
Our bills are regulated by Ofwat. So you can't sell off a water company to a different group of shareholders and they can't just decide to put up your water bills. It's Ofwat to decide the rate of that they're allowed to charge. And this is also another issue. So we've been paying for a service that we've not been receiving. So we've been paying to have our sewage dealt with properly. Hasn't been dealt with properly, we put in the river. We've been paying to have infrastructure built so we can continue having a water supply and not have to have hose pipe bans and not have to, potentially run out of water. And that's not happened. So it does make one very angry when one looks at where the money has gone and what's not been done, and then thinks about the prospect of paying potentially 40% more money on bills.
Mm. Are there examples of other countries who are doing things better that we might be able to model our system on?
It's partly an issue of the way that we initially built our water system. So countries that have a combined sewage overflow system with the grey water and the sewage and the rainwater going into the same drain, any country with that has similar issues in terms of sewage outflows. But there are countries in Europe that have managed to separate out the sewage from the grey water and rainwater and managed to clean up their waters. So actually, a good example of an area that cleans up their water is Lake Annecy in France.
Mm.
So that lake used to be polluted with sewage. They used to have a big sewer system nearby, this beautiful lake in the Alps. And the government, a few decades ago now, they completely overhauled the sewage system in Annecy and dealt with it properly. And now it's one of the cleanest lakes in Europe. Very, very popular holiday destination. It's completely rejuvenated the area. And if you contrast that with, for example, our most famous lake, Windermere, which is actually being quite badly polluted by sewage and has now got blue-green algae on it, which is toxic from sewage.
And so to Windermere. Every week, the protesters and their poo placards are outside the offices of United Utilities.
Knowing what you now know, would you swim in that lake?
Never. No, I wouldn't.
It's quite sad. So you think if they could manage to do that in France, why can't they manage to do it over here and fix what's happening in Windermere? Because people aren't going to go on holiday to a lake to go swimming if it's covered in sewage sludge.
Mm. I mean, Helena, we've been talking about the chronic lack of investment in the water network. But is there a part that we can all kind of individually play in trying to improve our water system or just trying to use less of it? You know, we do use a lot of water individually in this country, don't we?
Yes, we have some of the highest rate of water usage in Europe per capita. We apparently shower a lot longer than average in the UK. So apparently the average shower is between 7 and 8 minutes, according to Water UK. And they want us to shave 2 minutes off our showers. Also, the way that we build our homes, we don't recycle the grey water. So your bath water doesn't get used for other things in the home. For example, toilet water is all fresh tap water. It's not recycled water. So, I mean, some homes being built now do have those systems, but hasn't historically had that. So I know everyone should do their bit to reduce water and not go around spraying the hose pipe all the time during water shortages and stuff like that. And maybe people should take a shorter shower. But because the water companies are pushing it so hard that it's an individual issue, and actually reduction in usage is an infinitesimally small part of the problem when it comes to a massive structural issue, they'd be a lot happier, the water companies, I think, if we all started pointing the finger at each other and saying we use too much water, when actually, if they had invested, we're a very, very rainy country. So, you know, we could be able to use as much water as we liked if they had built the correct amount of reservoirs.
Helena, thank you very much.
Thanks.
The shareholders of Thames Water recently released a statement saying that shareholders and Thames Water have been working with the regulator Ofwat for over a year on how to address the complex challenges facing the business. These include both meeting current funding demands and the urgent need for substantial investment to improve performance. These discussions led to the submission of a business plan, which included the largest ever investment programme by any UK water company, over £18 billion, to improve customer service and environmental standards. Kemble Water, the parent company of Thames Water, has said, "The company expects that it will be in a position to provide a further update in the coming weeks." Thanks again to Helena Horton for joining us for this episode. She and the rest of the environment team are running a competition at the moment to find the invertebrate of the year. If you go to theguardian.com, you can read their profiles of the candidates that are shortlisted so far. You've got the barrel jellyfish, the glowworm, and the ash black slug, among others. And you can also nominate your favourite. You've got until Friday to do that, and the winner will be announced on Monday. That's it from us. I'm Hannah Moore. This episode was produced by Tom Glasser. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo, and the executive producer was Elizabeth Cassin. We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.